Are you still mixing station gas and oil for your string trimmer, leaf blower, or chainsaw? Eliminate the mess and the guesswork with TruFuel, the original pre-mixed two-cycle fuel. TruFuel is ethanol-free and precision-engineered for small engines, improving performance and extending the life of your outdoor power equipment. And TruFuel is available for both two- and four-cycle engines. Empower your equipment with TruFuel. Available at your local Home and Garden Center today.
Introducing the S&D Podcast Channel, your one-stop source for all types of podcasts. We are always on the look for new podcasts to join our channel. If there is any topic you would like to discuss, contact us now. We can be reached on all social media, such as Facebook, Twitter, and or Instagram. You can also contact us by email or leave us a voicemail at 516-570-9248. So make sure to contact us now so you can start your podcast soon.
Rising Report, it's that Apple Report. It's the Rising Apple Report. Rising Report, it's that Apple Report. It's the Rising Apple Report.
Yeah! Welcome to the Rising Apple Report, episode 145. I'm Nick Sarasso, and you know, it's been a better week for the Mets than last week, and with me today is Sam Matzwell. Sam, how you doing?
You know, I'm doing all right. I'm chilling a little bit on tequila during this game. Why not? We have a podcast, 145th edition. Why not where the Mets are? Yes, they've been doing better, of course, but last night, you just shake your head and like you just it's unfortunate that you can't really see an end in sight of how they really claw their way out of this, even if they can string together some wins. It's like, you know, and unfortunately, like, I kind of saw this coming where I was looking at 2018 and I didn't think 2017 was this doomed. Who can really foresee how everything can fall apart like this? Well, it is the Mets, but at the same time, you know, 2018 still looked better because you're going to have Dominic Smith. You're going to have Ahmed Rosario. Most likely these two people will be up. And you're going to have a very motivated pitching staff. And especially after this year, you can see it right now. 2018, I mean, you know, let's not write this season off. But, Nick, I don't know about you, but I really don't see – and we're going to obviously dig deep into exactly what's wrong. But I don't see an end in sight with their problems. How do you fix this in a quick amount of time? It's almost the end of May. It is the end of May. What am I talking about?
Well, it's certainly good to have you back. I know you weren't here for the last episode, and certainly we missed you for it. Now that we're on episode 145 and having Sam Matzwell back. Yeah, the Mets have a lot of problems, and you know, losing last night to San Diego, we'll talk about that game in just a little bit. I guess the one hope is that the guys get healthy at this rate, and some of the Mets players can come back. I know we'll dive into Steven Matz, Yoenis Cespedes as well later on, but there are just so many issues the Mets have right now. It's hard to fix everything. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they can do right now to help the team out and to get somewhere on a winning streak. But, you know, let's talk about, you know, Wednesday night's game. And, Sam, it always seems like we're talking about Terry Collins and the bad moves he makes. Last night's loss in Wednesday, the Mets lost 6-5 to the San Diego Padres. And, you know, the Mets were up 5-1 after four innings and were up 5-3 entering the seventh inning. And Robert Gsellman six hits, three runs allowed, three strikeouts, and only 84 pitches. Sam, was it the right move to pull Gsellman?
No, and the thing is that Terry Collins, who is an old school guy, is literally the oldest manager, I believe, in the game. I think he's just swung too far to the other side and thinks that, like, you know, he hasn't been pitching well. Like, you got to read the situation. you know, and outside of the idea that they shouldn't be babying these grown men who have fought their way through a lot of trials and tribulations to make it thus far, I don't think that you need to be worried. And maybe it's the Matt Harvey syndrome. It's now we're just completely and utterly worried about this guy's psyche, that it's kind of rubbed off on how we're thinking about all these other guys. And I mean, at that point, he had a good inning. He obviously had given up three runs, but he had a good inning to finish the sixth. He seemed in control, and he hadn't pitched in a while. And the bullpen's been an absolute mess. And the bullpen is not stretched out at all, not to mention you wasted some of your good players the day before during a 9-3 game. I mean, it just doesn't end with the ineptitude. And I see a lot of, like, 2009 written on the wall here in some fashion. I don't know. I don't think that it's going – I think they've set themselves up to have a better foundation. But at the same time, you know, you gotta watch out, because everything could bottom out where you think you're hanging in there. I mean, the 2009 team was hanging in there till July as well. And then it all completely cratered, and they didn't get anybody back either. As you kept talking about the cavalry, that's what we're talking about right now. As Drupal Cabrera coming back due to getting going, hopefully he's up at the plate right now as we record this. But, you know, it's just something's got to give with how this team, you know, I have faith that they will have better long-term stability with the plans they've put in place with their farm system. But it just seems to be that they're never going to have real stability as long as the Wilpons are in control.
You know, for the longest time, Mets starters have not been able to go deep into games this season. And we constantly heard Terry Collins say that's a need. We need the starters to go longer into these games. We need them to get into the seventh inning. And this is the best opportunity you have, especially when your bullpen's been overworked as much as it has for the first 2 months of this season. Gesellman only had 84 pitches. And, you know, we know he's good to throw another inning. You're versing the bottom of the order, 7, 8, and 9 hitters. This was the easiest decision I think Terry Collins could have ever made, which is leave Gesellman in right then and there.
Especially without Paul Sewald, who's pitched well tonight. Especially without him in place. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I'm tired of being fed up with him. Like, I'm never going to not be fed up with the guy until he shows me otherwise. And he really didn't, you know, going all the way back to 2015, like, by the time the World Series came around, there was the Terry Collins I hated the whole time. And so, you know, I don't know. I know he's now the longest tenured manager. He's put, you know, he cemented his place in Mets history. The question is going to be how is that going to be, except for one freakish year, you could say, how is that legacy going to be cemented? And this is the year. And either they keep cratering and he gets fired, because how can you let, you know, let's say they get, I mean, right now, when you think about it, and obviously I think some rainouts, you know, come into play there. But San Diego only has, I believe, two more wins. I'm sorry. Yeah, San Diego, the Mets only have two more wins than San Diego. Now, San Diego has like 31 losses. They're already that far ahead, whereas the Mets have like 25 losses today, I think. You know. It's they could really, if they have another terrible losing streak, they could be severely, their record could be, you know, almost double digits, you know, under 500. So they got to watch out, because and that's the problem, is that they're not really showing signs that they can have a sustained winning streak without eventually going to some major losing streak.
Yeah. Completely agree. I mean, San Diego, as you mentioned, they're 17-31, worst record in baseball. And, I mean, they're playing as we're doing this podcast, and they have a chance to take two of the three from the Mets. And that puts it into a mindset of, what exactly are the Mets right now, which is they're getting beat up by the worst team in baseball, which is they can't put away one of the worst offenses, San Diego, because the bullpen struggles. And going further into that game yesterday, you know, to make matters worse, and if you didn't like Terry Collins' decision into the seventh inning, it got a lot worse later on into that seventh inning, because from there, the bases were loaded, and the Mets bring in Neil Ramirez, who has a 10 ERA. The bases loaded,
and to face Will Myers,
yeah,
who
their best hitter
already hit a home run off of that year. Like, was the last time they had faced each other, there was a home run involved.
It's just another wrong move on the Terry Collins list, and Sam, has it gotten to the point where it just seems Terry Collins' decisions are resulting in more losses than wins?
And what's weird is that there's something in me that just seems like the Mets are all right with this. They're all right taking the loss on this season because they know that that Terry Collins' era is going to be over. They're going to have some new players coming up, and they're going to have a new manager. I mean, I think one way or the other, Terry Collins is not coming back next year. The contract's up, and I think Terry Collins is going to retire if he doesn't get fired before then. And you know, for him to get fired, obviously, I think it really, really needs a crater. But, like, what is cratering, you know, especially considering his potential lame duck status?
You know, you mentioned the Wilpons also as well. And it's one of those things where, you know, the Mets are a mess right now. And you don't know even who to blame at this point because it's a lot of terrible moves by Terry Collins, like you're saying. And I want to go back to that Wilpons point because, you know, the Mets are losing really bad. And it's one of those things where the Mets have one of the highest payrolls this year. And we know the Wilpons are not a fan of that. And they've got a ton of money off the books. So does it even seem like the Mets are even better off losing at this point? Because then it's like, hey, we shouldn't be spending our money because of where it's getting us. Because it almost seems like they're doing the flip side on this.
I don't know. I just know that, you know, Jeff Wilpon is the chief operating officer. You know, he is head of the operations. And this is how they operate. And they're constantly being criticized for how they operate in epic fashion. You know, they just do things differently than other teams, which magnifies, even if other teams, this similar things happen to other teams, the dysfunction just echoes and just carries. It completely carries. And it's just, you know, who knows? I just think that they're once again, and Sandy Alderson's kind of, you know, bought into this a little bit, unfortunately. It is just, you see that paranoid, you know, team worried about their image and, you know, as they do in New York. And then it backfires and their image looks worse. So the whole thing is just, it's just, you know, and in a very morbid way, it's very entertaining. And that's the thing about the Mets is that they're never not entertaining, even when they just want to make you pound your head into the wall.
Certainly Mets fans know that sentence very well.
And guess what? I just want to bring something up. I'm not sure. Do you have the game in front of you?
Yes. Yeah, I have it on the left of me.
Okay, so is Ryan Butcher a lefty?
I don't.
The guy, I'm sorry for context for our listeners out there. The pitcher that the Padres just brought in to originally face Curtis Granderson, who was then pitch hit for TJ Rivera. And that brings something up regarding last night in terms of pinch hitting for Curtis Granderson. So I'm wondering, he is a left-hander.
He is a lefty, yeah.
It's came up now. There his name is. So why didn't Terry do that last night with the bases loaded in the ninth and no outs?
Well, that was one of my other questions I would have asked you. I'll get to that one. Jay Bruce was on the bench. Mm-hmm. Of all players, one of the best hitters on the Mets lineup, and I know he had a back injury, but he's in the lineup for today's game. So it could
sounds like he could have pinch hit.
Yeah, right. that's one of those things where you have Curtis Granderson who's batting 100. You have Rene Rivera. I know you don't, but you still had the three catchers for that day. So you had Kevin Pulecki on the bench. I know Rivera's batting like the 300 numbers, but certainly Jay Bruce should have been pinched hit in that game. If he's good to go for today's game, he should have been good to go for the ninth inning of the last out or the last couple outs of that game. So certainly another questionable move on Terry Collins.
Yep. And, you know, there was just an article out about how it's one of the most difficult decisions he's had to make, you know, because he admires the guy, Curtis, so much. But it's like, well, that's the, like, Curtis of all people are the ones, is the one that's going to be okay with just taking the role and being ready. And that's the thing. He might be more ready to take on some pitching later on in the game than, you know, he is. I mean, because look how he struck out against that pitcher that far into the game. So, and now TJ Rivera just struck out swinging. That's unfortunate. And so it goes. Opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. And that's another constant narrative in the entire Mets history.
Runners in scoring position.
Runners in scoring position. And I'm not even exaggerating. Apparently, like, the Mets could have won an extra, like, 50 games with how close they were back in 1962. You know, it's something crazy how many times they lost when they could have potentially won with, because they were in position to either tie the game or take the lead.
Just a simple stat, and so many times we've heard, oh, the Mets go 0-10 and with runners in scoring position, or 1-12, and just...
Although they've been better this year.
Part of that has to do with they finally have improved the offense over the last couple of years.
Conforto
hitting.
The pitching sucks.
Yeah.
The pitching's the worst in baseball. And I'm pretty sure I'm not exaggerating right now.
No, certainly they have been terrible the month of May. And it just seems like, well, we can get one or the other. We had pitching all these years. Now we finally get a little bit of hitting, but the pitching, nope.
And that's why it's like, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, continue.
No, I was just going to say that's why 2018 just seems like it could be a serious year, especially like with the motivation coming off of what could potentially be a dud.
Yeah, certainly the Mets have a lot of moves to make in the 2017 offseason to get to the 2018 season. There's just a list of names that are free agents going in the outfield. Jay Bruce, Joel Cabrera, Jose Reyes, and it even goes further like Addison Reed. So there's a ton of guys, Lucas Duda as well, that are free agents at the end of the season. So the 2018 season is definitely going to be a very different roster than whereas 16 to 17, there were no changes. So I think that's one thing I think Mets fans are definitely looking forward to, because change is often better, and certainly the Mets need to make some sort of adjustments.
And it looked like for a second that Reyes was guaranteed to be coming back. But right now, I definitely wouldn't say that's necessarily a guarantee.
Yeah, after what he did last year, I thought he could be spending a couple more years with the Mets and more being a ultimate utility bench player. But right. If he's only able to hit 200, it certainly brings a lot more questions to his production.
Exactly. So I'm curious to see how that goes. I mean, the thing is that he's evened out at like 210, 211, 205, which, like, when you think about it, he was under 1 for a long time. I mean, he was doing really badly. So he's had to hit like 300 consistently over a course of a time just to even out at 2-something.
And to expect it on a consistency is tough to believe as well. Because you don't know at this point, is he going to be the completely struggling guy, especially if his role starts to decrease? Does that lead to, you know, a lot of his production falling off?
Yeah, he got a double tonight. Unfortunately, Matt Reynolds was thrown out at the plate. But I'd be curious to see, you know, this is why I want to see Ahmed Rosario up, because I think then Reyes is put into that rotating super utility player immediately. Because you got to have Cabrera in the lineup, because I think he's a better hitter than Reyes right now.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into Cabrera a little bit later on as well. I want to touch a little bit more on the bullpen. It just seems to be, you know, the complete mess of this team. You have Fernando Salas, you know, came in the seventh. He has a near 6 ERA. You put in Neil Ramirez. He has over a 10 ERA. Josh Smoker, who allowed the sole home run to Hunter Renfroe.
Hello?
Hey, Mike, are you there?
Hey.
Hey, all right.
Hey, but wait. Continue, and hey, Mike, how you doing? Long Island Mike, everybody. He's going to rant in a little bit. But we're gonna finish up, Nick. Go ahead.
So you have Josh Smoker, who also allowed the sole home run to Hunter Renfroe. He has an 8 ERA. Sam, is there any way to fix these bullpen issues, or does Kerry Collins need to realize that he has to pit the right people for certain spots when the Mets have a lead?
I think that they are struggling completely, and Terry doesn't have anywhere to go. Now, mind you, I think that everything has been magnified because of the way Terry Collins operates the bullpen. And especially this brings up Robert Gesellman and how he was doing yesterday. And just how important it really was for that inning to belong to the starting pitcher. And like the reasoning that, oh, I would have had to bring in Salas anyway, was beyond fathomable, because he shouldn't be operating with what he might have to do. See what happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, just, it seems like you bring in the wrong guys in a winning situation.
Nick?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Nick. Sorry, we lost you for a second.
No, we lost Mike. So we'll see if we can get Mike back on the podcast for us.
He'll get back. He's back. But I bet you, Mike, go ahead. You know what? I bet you Long Island Mike has a lot to rant about when it comes to Terry Collins.
Oh, yes. Why is he still the manager of this team to begin with? Well, we've been questioning that for how long now? 2 years or so, I guess? Last night was pathetic. You have Curtis Grandison up with the bases loaded against a left-handed pitcher. You leave him in. Are you kidding me? He swung at every slider that was out of the strike zone. I wanted to break my TV when I saw that. Like, I was getting to the point where I'm like, this team sucks. Then you have Sandy Alderson's like, Ahmed Rosario can't pitch, don't call him up. Do I care that he can't pitch? Give this team a spark. Do something with your lonely life. Like, stop trying to protect the players. Like, Terry is being nice about Gesellman. Let's pull him when he's coming out after a good inning. He was at 83 pitches or something like that. Makes total sense. Like, with the bullpen issues we have, I have no clue what is Terry thinking. He puts Blevins in when it was, what, 10-3? And he wasn't available last night? Why would you put Blevins in when it was 10-3 or whatever the score was? I'm telling you, anyone can be a better manager than Terry Collins.
Yeah, you mentioned Terry Collins, simple thing, he's got the all-time most games as a manager, and he has a losing record.
Yeah.
So it's incredible to still say, like, we're questioning what he's doing, but he's got a losing record at the end of the day, no matter what.
And with a good year, he will have a winning record. I think it's that close. Am I right?
Yeah, he's like, I think 8 or 10 games under 500.
He's 8 or 10 games under 500, which means that if they were to win 90 wins, if they were to have 90 wins this year, he'd probably eke a little bit above 500 for all time.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. When the Mets really did suck way back when, which isn't really way back when, if you think about it, that's what screwed Terry Collins over, their record. But he's getting old. He has no idea what he's doing anymore, in my opinion.
He never had an idea what he was doing. He's been bad since he began. And it really started getting magnified. I wasn't really cognizant of it as much in 2012. And then 2013, I was like, what the hell is this guy doing? I was like, this team would have been a playoff team a lot earlier had it not been for Terry Collins.
Definitely.
And one of the things I think that's interesting is, like, baseball has very much changed and has become a very statistical sport, analytical. We see the numbers into the game that's put into it, the algorithm theories. It seems like Terry Collins almost ignores all that. Oh, Juan Lagares is the best defensive center fielder that the Mets have. Well, we won't put him in when it comes to big-time situations that we need him to be a defensive player for us. Like you said, the lefty-on-lefty matchups, it's an obvious choice, and we don't make
the switch. He's just clueless. He's clueless.
Hey, let's look on the bright side here.
He's clueless, he's TC.
At least he's playing Conforto every day now.
Yeah, for a while he wasn't. It took Conforto to hit 340.
I want to see where Terry Collins is from. I forget where he's born, but I'm going to look that up right now. Because I want to see if I can make a phrase catch on.
And Mike,
he's from clueless Terry from Michigan. There it is. Clueless Terry from Michigan. From Midland. Clueless Terry from Midland, Michigan. There we go. Spread it around.
Oh God.
Well, Mike, you had mentioned Jerry Blevins, and I personally think that Terry and the New York Mets need to start putting Jerry Blevins and Addison Reed in almost an expanded role, mainly Blevins. I mean, we're talking about a guy with a 1.72 ERA, and he's pitched very well, but he only seems to throw a couple pitches at most, and not even a full inning for most of his appearances. Do you think he needs to... You know, Collins needs to start pushing Blevins for more appearances and for more innings and for especially closer games?
Well, with the appearances, people I see making a big deal on Twitter be like, oh, he's on pace for 98 appearances. Meanwhile, those appearances are what? One or two outs an inning. So it's really not a long appearance. So, yeah, if Salas is struggling, maybe put Blevins in the eighth row and Reed in the ninth if we have a lead or something like that.
It goes back. It was a flashback. Even though it was this time it's against the Padres, who are the worst team in the league. But it just flashbacks to that time he used Familia to lock down a World Series game, and then completely botched it the next night.
Yep. Because Terry Collins has no idea what he's doing anymore. So how about Capella,
Ever?
The next manager?
Who?
Chip Hale? Yeah.
Is he out of a job?
I think. I thought he was.
At this rate, you could put names on a dartboard, just throw the dart, and I'd be fine.
I'm just so sad it's not going to be Wally. So sad.
He already got fired out of his Mexico managing job.
I know that. I did hear that. That's true.
You mentioned Michael Conforto, and he went 2-for-3 with 2 walks, an RBI, a run. Conforto has been the best Met this season, by far. At this moment, Sam, does he deserve to be in the All-Star game? Or part of the All-Star team?
Me?
Mike, you can take it if you want. I don't know if Sam is there right now.
Yeah, definitely. I'm writing Conforto the max amount of times I can vote a day, basically. And Terry Collins was an idiot not starting him the first 2 weeks of the season. And you know what Mets Twitter is going to be like if he gets benched when Cespedes comes back? Oh, I don't want to be around for that.
Yeah, certainly Conforto, he's nailed down the leadoff spot with a 341 average coming into today. While Jose Reyes has really struggled, but he's been the two-hitter for the last couple of games. And, Sam, are you there also? Yep. I guess not. But, Mike, is Reyes the right choice for that two spot?
Ooh, what's he batting now? 207 or something?
If that.
So, he has speed when he gets on base out of the two hole, which I like personally. Speed in the two hole. That's my opinion. I like that. when he gets on base, obviously, not when he's popping out the shortstop or third base, whatever he pops out to. But when he hits the ball and makes solid contact and he gets on base, yeah, I like it. But if he's going to continue hitting 200, I'm sorry, bench Reyes. I'm sorry, call up Amed Rosario. Put Cabrera to third base. I'm sorry.
Testing 1-2.
Yep, you're there, back. Sam.
Amed Rosario, I think it's pretty clear that they are still living in a world where they're waiting for the Super 2 status.
Cheap. That's what they are.
Yeah, I know Reyes is considered this guy with speed, and I think that's because a lot of Mets view of him when he was the player than when he was first with the Mets. But 5 stolen bases this season in 43 games, I don't really consider this guy the speed threat that he once was.
And because the team doesn't need him to be that anymore, even though they should. But I also think he's just been very timid. I think whatever was going on with Jose Reyes to begin this year really affected his head, and he's just been very timid to be himself, and that's the biggest issue with, you know, Reyes going forward, because I think he can be in many ways, and we've seen it. We've seen some flashes here and there. He just got 2,000 hits. And with a great next few years, he could have 1,000 hits by the end of his career. Another 1,000 hits by the end of his career. And, but at the same time, what is he going to be? Is he going to be too afraid of being who he can be because he's getting older? I don't know. So, I think Reyes, obviously, we see how energetic we can be. And unfortunately, we've seen in his career that energy project itself positively and negatively. And some of it might also project itself into insecurity. And it's Jose Reyes is a very curious situation right now and how his career plays out.
Yep. In all honesty, he should be benched, in my opinion. I'm sorry. I want Amed Rosario. When I go to games, I want to see I want to see talent. I don't want to see people looking at pitches down the middle be like, oh, that's a ball. Like, stop arguing. Swing the bat when it's right down the middle. Like, seriously.
I don't know if we're going to see Rosario. Before the All-Star game, I don't see the Mets calling him up. It just doesn't make sense.
No, I think he gets called up at some point, mid June to late June. I hear that the cutoff is like sometime early June, and I have a feeling that maybe they'll wait like a couple more weeks not to look too shady, and then they'll do it, and then they'll have him for another year, and that will be nice. That will be nice. Let's be honest, but at the same time I think it's probably a load of malarkey. And I think, like, Frank Viola is playing the company line when he says, oh, he needs to stop swinging at breaking pitches out of the zone. I think, most prospects do eventually need to stop doing that if they're going to be major leaguers. That is true. But I don't think this kid, obviously, everybody's saying it's only a matter of time.
With his Jubal Cabrera coming back, I think it's going to make it a lot more difficult for him to have any consistency of getting guaranteed at-bats right now, which is the key when it comes to guys getting called up.
But he has been playing third.
But Wilmer Flores is hitting like crazy.
That's a great point, too. I mean, and, TJ Rivera was hitting well, and now he's not. I don't know.
I think it comes down to the fact that the Mets have 6 infielders, and one of them will catch hot. And when that one guy does, that one guy's got to be in playing time. It was TJ Rivera. It looks like it's Wilmer Flores right now. And you just got to play the hot hand. And to add another one into that mix, I don't know if that's going to work, especially with a rookie player.
Michael, what do you think?
I kind of agree. There's no need to... I like Wilmer Flores right now. He's hitting off righties finally. Shocker, in my opinion. I know a Yankees fan that said they would never take him if they ever got offered a trade. But now he said, he would definitely take him since he's hitting righties. So, yeah, I think... Well, we should be playing every day.
Yeah, but he can't throw for a lick from third.
Put him at second.
Where are you going to put and put Walker at third?
Yeah.
At this point, Wilmer's hitting better than Walker. I'm so long as we get Wilmer's bat in the lineup at that moment, I have no disagreement.
You know what would be nice? I mean, hey, listen, you gotta have a bad day sometime, but it would be nice for Michael Conforto not to strike out on this at-bat right now.
Oh, I'm not even watching the game right now.
Yeah, it's because it's very frustrating, but I got the game day up.
How's Conforto doing today? He's on my fantasy team.
He struck out three times.
Oh, well. My God. Time to bench him.
Oh, he struck out four times. Golden sombrero for Michael Conforto.
Conforto, just update, he struck out with bottom of the seventh with one out and one on. Now two outs. But as Drupal Cabrera has been activated from the DL, that affects a lot of players, as we've mentioned a few of them. Reyes mainly took shortstop in Asdrubal's replacement for that time being. And while Wilmer Flores took the third base role, I know you guys mentioned Wilmer defensively at third, but Sam, with Asdrubal back in the lineup, who should have the majority playing time at third base?
Who should? If Wilmer's hitting, I guess it should be Wilmer. I think Terry right now is kind of married to his Conforto Reyes top of the lineup thing. But with this dribble back, I mean, you have a natural born two hitter right there. So, yeah, Wilmer Flores should be playing third base.
And Mike, do you have a preference on who should have the majority playing time at third?
Wilmer. I'm sorry. He's too hot right now. Don't mess with him. But, you know, Terry with his logic will mess with him.
Yeah, Wilmer coming into today.
Yep.
Two hits in each of his last three games, batting over 400 against lefties, batting 300 this season right now. I mean, other than Conforto, he's the hottest bat on this team, and that speaks a lot for ours and all the changes he's made to his team. The Mets had to send down... Oh, go on, Sam.
No, I was going to say, you know, we've gotten... talk about whether the Mets are going to have to trade for starting pitchers, you know, come to the deadline, and whether the Braves would be willing to trade Bartolo Colon, maybe even throw in Ari Dickey into the mix. Who knows? Here's the thing, though, right now. The Braves are better than us.
Hey, remember I called it in the first podcast of this year that we were going to suck? We would be in fourth place at the end of the year?
Hey,
I remember that.
This is where it's going right now.
That's an impressive projection at the moment.
Well, I had no faith in this team at all this year.
I had wild card faith.
2018, man. 2018.
I still have some wild card faith.
Is it called?
So, Kevin Pulecki was sent down, as the Mets catcher Travis d'Arnaud has also returned. The team didn't need three catchers, so Pulecki the odd man out when Asdrubal Cabrera got activated from the DL. Sam, how important is it for the Mets to have Travis back? And should the Mets have Travis be the main starter, or Rene Rivera, or both should be splitting time, or Rivera should earn the starting position?
I'm a big fan of Rene Rivera. Give it to Rene Rivera. Because Travis just hasn't been hitting a lick lately. And Rene has, even though he's cooled off a little bit. And he's a better catcher. And can prevent runs. I mean, right now, you need to prevent runs. Because the Mets offense is fine. But what they haven't been doing proper is preventing runs. So you got to give it to Rene.
Yeah, Mike, with Travis back, who is the main starter in your eyes?
He's hitting. Travis, like Sam said, can't hit anything right now. I think Travis' career is done, in all honesty.
So you don't think the Mets should be having Travis d'Arnaud as their main catcher over the next few years?
No. I'm sorry. You're going to be freeing up all this money in free agency this year and spend it on someone good. That's all I have to say.
A good catcher.
Like a Matt Wieters or somewhere along that line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine had they done that.
Well, you still would miss out
on... No, I was going to say Long Island Mike. Do I remember you saying that Matt Wieters wanted to sign with the Mets?
I believe so. I believe I read that in an article back during the offseason, but obviously that didn't happen.
A lot of things didn't happen for the Mets in the offseason other than returning players.
Yep.
But hey, Jose Reyes got a single.
Wow.
Hopefully you can boost that average from 201 to 202.
Yep, actually, it's probably 205 now.
Wow,
but Jabers grounds MVP. Out. Jabers grounds out. You know, I think, going on a Jabers tangent real quick, he's averaged out to what you expect, 250, but he's still on pace... He's still on pace to have a pretty solid home run and RBI season. And every time that so far that you thought like he's going to really start cooling off, he does gather a hit here and there. He had a home run, making it look like they could possibly come back in that game on Saturday, on Sunday, I mean. But then Hansel Robles. And that's all you have to say these days to, you know, like Hansel Robles has become the yada, yada, yada of lots of runs giving up, but with Jay Bruce, I think that I still expect him to have a pretty solid season. Every time that you think he's disappearing, he comes back a little bit from the dead.
Yeah, Mike. While Sam mentioned Jay Bruce, you know, do you think part of Jay Bruce's struggles is because he doesn't have any big name guy supporting him like Yoenis Cespedes?
No, because he was carrying this team while Cespedes was out of here the whole time. It's called these chasing pitches.
So now it's almost he's trying to do too much.
Yeah.
Sort of like David Wright over the few years when Wright was healthy and he was the only guy able to produce on the team. He was swinging at everything at that point.
Don't even get me started on David Wright. That's all I have to say.
And Sam, you mentioned Hansel Robles. Is Hansel Robles the new Aaron Heilman?
No, because Aaron Heilman gave up a really unclutch home run. that Hansel Robles is just... Hansel Robles is like, God, you're so talented. It's just another one of those pitchers for the Mets where you're waiting for him to just have that crispness consistently, and then he does it. And what's ridiculous about it is that he had the best stretch of his career until he had the absolute worst stretch that anybody's had in a while.
Guys, I just found David Wright's death certificate. name, David Allen Wright. Time of death, June 4th, 2015, 5:35 p.m. Authorized by Frey Ramirez.
Jeez. Oh. Well, then.
Lucas Duda has been hitting great against the Padres this series. He went 3-for-4 with 3 RBIs in the first game, 0-for-2 with 3 walks and a run scored, and a home run in today's game. Mike, how important is it for Duda to be hitting his offensive strides, and can he keep it up?
No, he won't keep it up. I already know that for a fact. He's a streaky guy like Jay Bruce. You know what? I want Dominic Smith up while we're at it, too. I want prospects. This guy needs to go.
I think that Ahmed Rosario is going to be the first up. I think Dominic Smith will probably sniff the big leagues in September. But I think it's almost guaranteed, depending on how they do next spring, that Dominic Smith will be at first base. And they're probably, and they've been waiting for this day of Lucas Duda being off this team. They don't know what they still don't know what they have in Lucas Duda. They're waiting for Lucas Duda to just be what he should be, which is 2014. But, you know, even that year was, I mean, he finished really strongly, but it was still a you know, weirdly inconsistent season.
Yeah, there was a time when they should have called Dominic Smith up when Duda got injured, but they put up Rivera and Wilmer Flores majority at first base. There was a time when they could have called Rosario up when his Jubal was banged up and all the other different injuries in the infield. They're not doing it, and for some reason, you know, they're holding on to these two precious star prospects and not trying to see what they can actually do in the big leagues right now. But I will take the flip side, and I'll say Duda will be able to keep up his offensive strides because, Mike, you mentioned he is a streaky hitter, and if he's able to get hot right now, that's what the Mets need. And when he does get hot, we've seen the offensive production that he has. And when he's healthy, you know, back in 2014, in a two-year span, he did hit as many home runs as Yoenis Cespedes did in a two-year span. So hopefully Duda can hit his offensive strides. We saw a little power tonight as well, and that can lead to some streakiness, but some good streakiness.
Don't know what the Mets need. They need the guy that they're paying $25 million a year for in the field and not hurting his hamstring every week.
Just a little note. Chase Darnot right now is a better hitter than his brother. Numbers-wise.
God.
Oh, that's a scary moment.
333. Chase Darnot, although, to the Travis Darnot's credit, Chase Darnot just dropped from 357 to 333, so he obviously hasn't gotten too many at-bats.
No, I think he only got like 12 at-bats this year.
Right,
He was just picked up off of waivers by the Padres.
Because why not?
Yep.
It's the eighth, by the way.
Oh, good thing I'm not watching this game. My TV would probably be broken by now.
Yeah, because it's the Padres. They're about to lose a series to the Padres. And this is what always happens. This is what happens with this team. And this is what happens, you know, just with bad Met teams. Is that they're about to get a groove. They've got a lead late, you know, where they could win a couple games in a row. Terry screws it up, and then they lose six. Same thing happened after the Giants series. Same thing happened earlier in the year. After the Miami losses, it's just, and then, you know, Milwaukee, yep. That last game of the year where they could have picked it up. It's just.
Oh, what about the Nationals? 23-5 away, whatever that was.
Whole different story.
Yeah, there's also that one where they had a lead. Oh, and where they were down 6-5.
Oh, God.
That was an omen.
The tragedy of a Mets fan's life.
That was an omen as to what this team could look like. What this
can't be as bad as a Knicks fan's life, though.
No.
Unless you're both.
That's why I'm a Giants fan and not a Jets.
The Mets are playing baseball and losing, and the Yankees said, screw it, we're not going to play tonight.
That I find is the strangest rainout, where you have the Mets playing the game in New York. The Yankees rained out their game in New York.
And they were like, eh.
I love
this is Kansas City. They're not going to come that often.
Yeah. I love Terry Collins when they said, oh, we're pushing DeGrom back due to the weather. I'm probably like, so is that the new way to say season-ending injury? Probably is.
Yeah. Tomorrow we're going to, like, he can't go. He's on the 60-day just like that.
Tommy John.
I'm sorry, the Mets don't put players on to DLs that quickly. Here's the thing. They would rather get the MRI before putting a player onto the DL. It's ridiculous.
Unless it's in like, Noah Syndergaard's case where he doesn't hit the MRI.
Right.
Oh, God.
Noah. I mean, like, as Drubal Cabrera injured something, they were like, hey, you know, we're going to wait. Then he re-injured it. Yoenis Cespedes same thing. This just keeps happening. Yoenis Cespedes re-injured his hamstring, and then they didn't officially put him onto the DL until after the MRI. I mean, what? Why? It's clear that you're going to put him on the DL. Just put him on the DL, and then see exactly how bad it is. It's just like, you're going to lose him for 10 days. You should have lost him 5 days ago for 10 days. And now you just lost him for a month.
Yeah.
That's the Mets organization for you. It's a joke.
In a baseball world, what hamstring doesn't lead to a disabled list? Even grade one, usually you're out at least 5 days. And in this 10-day DL, simply put, you can take him off the extra 5 days. Don't let him have to stress out. And relax it. But that's the lowest hamstring injuries, at least.
I have a question. If the Mets wanted to, could they lie and say, like, Cespedes had a concussion and put him on the 7-day concussion DL?
No.
Pretty hard to prove he's got a concussion if he's limping.
Hey, unless you have, like, some really comic shenanigans back in the, you know, like, Three Stooges style. You're like, hey, Johannes, look over there! And then you give him a concussion.
I love that movie.
Well, speaking of Cespedes, he's expected to play in a few rehab games, and it's expected to be...
Now I'm just picturing like it's just crazy bit in the trainer's room with Ray Ramirez and Johannes Cespedes, where somehow they find a way to give their $25 million player a concussion. We just want you on there for 7 days, eh?
Oh, God.
Hey, a double!
In baseball, when insurance covers DL salaries, that's certainly a possibility.
Right? Jesus.
So how much do we have to pay David Wright this year? Zero, right?
I think at this point, I mean, if he comes back, you'll have to pay him for those amount of time. But at this point, I think it's after like 90 days or something that insurance will pick up. And he's not going to be back before 90 days.
Ah, insurance. It's a good thing sometimes.
I think he's going to have to retire. I think he's
Please really, like, do, David.
Apparently there's, Nick, I heard that there were rumors that, you know, just like whispers that he is having to really contemplate retirement.
Well, I think he's had to think about it for the last couple of years. I mean, serious bat surgeries, serious net surgeries, herniated disc. He certainly has had reasons to think about retirement, and of course, being in New York, that gives it an extra bonus of retirement talk. But, you know, the captain of the team finally got out to a World Series, was healthy enough to play in it. I'd hate to see him
got
have
a home
to retire.
Run.
The guy's a fighter. At the end of the day, he wants to win. He wants to be in the lineup. He wants to play. Say what you want about it. Like, he does get banged up. One of the most unluckiest players probably when it comes to injuries. But there's nobody else in my mind that wants to be in a lineup every day other than him.
And possibly ruined Ike Davis's career running into him.
I think Ike Davis ruined his own career.
Ike Davis was good that 1 year.
Ike Davis was on his way to being good again until he... Yes! Runs, Lucas! What is it?
Oh, wait, should I turn on the game?
What
I'm
going to
turn on the game and be the jinx.
Tell me he just tied it.
I'm going to be the
it
jinx
says runs
turning
with
the
a,
game.
It's runs with a with an, oh, with an apostrophe. It could be run or runs.
Nope, 3-2.
3-2, bottom, single. Hey, bottom. Lucas collecting a home run and a single. I'll take it.
Bottom 8, one out, man on first, Cabrera coming off the bat.
Off the bench.
Yeah.
On for Flores?
Yeah, Flores got the RBI. Flores flew out, I believe.
I know that everybody listening to this is going to already know what happens in this game, but isn't this entertaining?
Not really. I want them to lose. I want a good draft pick.
Oh, you're thinking of draft picks again already.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We need to restock that farm system. So who do you want to
Mets
trade?
Fan base, the Mets
trade
fan base. The Mets fan base, like psyche, basically is ready for the roller coaster. And is literally immediately turning the other corner and going, well, this is how it works, right? I'll just think of the draft pick already.
Double play for Cabrera.
Already? That already happened?
Yep. Going to the top nine.
Well, Mike, I want to get into the trade in just a minute, but before that, Jonas Vesvitas, going to play in a few rehab games. Expected to be back early next week. Mike, who is the outfielder that will lose the most playing time when Cespedes comes back?
Let's just say if Grandison's not benched, I will throw my TV out the window and light it on fire. And then I will go on Mets Twitter, and let's just say the Mets Twitter won't be handling it well. I think I'll break Twitter, in all honesty.
So, Collins, if you want Mike to break his TV, certainly a possibility if you keep your Edison in the lineup.
I mean, who are we talking, like, could, it's just like, you know, Conforto's cooled off a little bit. I think I'm going to give him some time on the bench. four strikeouts, I don't want him to, I don't want to hurt his feelings.
Yeah, I'll throw my TV out the damn window, I'm not even kidding.
Well, with Cespedes coming back, tonight you had Curtis Granderson in center field.
He's not in center field, but Conforto should be in center field. I'm sorry.
So Conforto should be playing center field when Jonas Cespedes comes back.
Yes.
Sam, you agree with that?
Yeah, I like the center field that Curtis Granderson plays. I actually think it's magnificent, especially for his age. But that doesn't mean that because he's, you know, flailing at sliders, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do. I think he's a better outfielder. I think he's a better center fielder than Conforto. But I am astounded and pleasantly surprised at how adept Michael Conforto is at fielding at all, ever, anywhere.
Yeah, that scouting report was wrong about his defense.
He just gets to the ball, you know. Like,
you got
even
a
if
cannon.
Juan Lagares, even if Juan Lagares or Curtis Granderson can get to it quicker, Michael Conforto figures out a way to get his glove on the ball. He keeps his eye on the ball, whether it's at bat or whether he's diving for a ball. So that's what I think.
Yeah, he's made a couple great plays this season in both left and in center. So he certainly is impressive, and his bat is a must to keep in this lineup. Because, like we said earlier, this guy's probably going to be representing the Mets in the All-Star game. If the Mets are going to have more than one, but
silver lining around the storm cloud of the Mets is that Lucas Duda collected both RBIs tonight.
Oh, God, Addison Reed's pitching. God.
Who can't you say that about in this Mets bullpen right now, Michael?
I don't know why Hansel Robles was sent down. I'm sorry. That was stupid.
I disagree with that. Hansel Robles needed to point towards
single.
The Las Vegas, needed to point towards the Las Vegas Sun.
I think any Met that's got a 6 ERA or more should be sent down, which leaves us with no bullpen, but
and no starting pitching, except DeGrom.
So there's our rest of our bullpen and starting pitching at that point. DeGrom and Blevins. But, you know, speaking of trades, I'm always a fan of trades, and so I want to throw a player on the Mets that I think has the best possibility of getting dealt, and that is Juan Lagares, and I can see him getting dealt for relief pitching. So, Sam, your thoughts on that possibility, and is there a player in your mind that has a better chance of the Mets trading away?
I don't know if there has been a center fielder other than Carlos Beltran that I loved watching in the Mets outfield more than Juan Lagares recently. But these days, he doesn't do it enough for me to be too attached to that. So, yeah, I'd be fine with Juan Lagares being included in a trade. I think that, you know, nothing against Juan Lagares, but Brandon Nimmo, it would be interesting to mix him in. And right now, with the outfield depth, there's Juan Lagares, you know, better outfielder than Brandon Nimmo for sure. But I don't think we'd be at too much of a loss if we tried to figure out how to piece together this year by giving up Juan Lagares partially.
And, Mike, your thoughts on possibly Juan Lagares could be the first Met that gets dealt, or is there a better chance a different Met player gets traded away.
Here's what Sandy's going to say, because we all know what he's going to say. Oh, he's the only center field that we have. You guys were just complaining about the amount of outfielders we have. Make up your minds already. Well, yes, that would help, but I'm sorry. There's no need to trade the dude. Why don't we trade Bruce, Cabrera, Walker, Reed, and you can get quality players for them easily. Juan Lagares is the only above average center fielder I should say in terms of defense. When he's hitting, he can't hit a ball for his life. Let me just make that clear. But late in games, like let's say if the Mets were winning 3-2 right now, which will never happen again probably, Lagares would be in the game, I would think.
For me, I think Lagares holds just slightly more value than everybody else because of his contract. And I think a team like the Oakland Athletics are a team to always consider because they do have a lot of bullpen and not much in the outfield. And when you could add a guy like Juan Lagares, that is that great defensive player, I think it's a good fit.
Especially that big outfield.
What about the Padres? I want Brad Hand.
Makes one save with the bases loaded.
Yep. That's clutch. Or is it the Mets just sucking?
No, it could be the Mets sucking. Anderson being the next guy up. Wilmer Flores needed to drive that runner in.
Well, he got a hit.
I said, but it was too hard, probably.
No, it was too soft. The guy literally was playing shallow. It literally just got through the hole. Sam. Who's our third base coach?
By the way, just to disclaim, I have not been drinking tequila this entire time, just to start the game.
It's gotten
and
worse
just to
since.
Disclaim, I have not had any bleach yet because of this team.
Good. Let me know when you do. Oh, wait, you won't be able to because you'll be dead.
Sam, Jacob DeGrom in his last start threw 7 shutout innings, striking out 9. Do you think DeGrom can finally get on the right rhythm?
These guys have spoiled us. You know, we're just like, hey, you know, like, yeah, keep this scoreless thing going like you used to. like, you know, I think that you gotta see where it goes, because he's been striking people out left and right. But he's also been walking people and giving up some runs. So that was definitely something to bounce off of. And right now, he's the de facto ace. So go to Grom. I've always been impressed with him, and he continues to impress. And you just don't want him to have game after game like the Game 5 of the Division Series a few years ago.
Yeah, and for the Mets, their Nets 10 games. His next start, DeGrom, will be pitching Friday. First game of a 3-game road series against Pittsburgh. The Mets' next 10 games sits against the Pittsburgh Pirates, a home and a road series. And in between that is a 4-game series against the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers recently swept the Mets. While the Pirates...
Leave the white flag.
Yeah. While the Pirates have won 8 of their last 12 games and sits in 3 against NL East teams in that span. So, Mike, what is something the Mets need to do to get into the win column more over the next 10 games?
Get quality pitching. Actually get some offense starting to go because the offense is cooling down. You know, let's not have Roy Ramirez injure everyone. Let's fire Roy Ramirez, actually. And, yeah, all that good stuff.
I love that we're, like, saying this, like, Ray Ramirez is going out there and snapping their legs in half.
I think he is. He's invisible.
It's hysterical.
Sam, your thoughts on what the Mets can do, you know, obviously to improve into the win column, especially against two very hot teams at the moment in these next 10 games?
Hey, you know, this is when the Mets shine and start turning things around, is when they're playing, when we think like, oh my God, they look so miserable going into the Washington series. Remember that? And so maybe that's when they turn it, you know, they turn it on. Mind you, you know, yeah, they won that series, but they did lose the last game 23-5. And we were talking about that earlier, but I think that I don't know what they can do right now, man. They've looked awful. They've looked awful. Everybody's looked awful. The manager's been awful. Every guy in the bullpen's been awful. The starting pitching's been awful. The offense stops hitting once the bullpen gives it up. They've been awful. This is my Jerry Seinfeld impression.
However, that also just sums up the Mets 100%.
Yeah.
Oh, God, the Mets.
I don't know, man.
Maybe it really does stand for my
entire always team supposed sucks. It's always supposed to be a miracle.
I just need to...
I will say this, Michael. You're like 23 years behind that being funny.
I just need to put this out there. I am so sorry for everyone that's a Mets, Islanders, Knicks, and Jets fan. I am so sorry for you guys.
Well, they probably have a cool lacrosse team that wins a bunch of championships.
Oh, by the way, it's 4-2.
Oh, God. Addison. Well, there's no point in... There's no point in playing this one out, shall we, guys? Like, I don't know. We can't. It's not over till it's over. But jeez,
raise the white flag, as I've been saying.
Well, if there's any bullpen that's just as bad or slightly better than the Mets bullpen, it's the Padres. So there's still a chance, but you know,
bases loaded, nobody out.
Small chance.
Oh my God!
I'm calling Conforto gets a home run next inning.
Oh, I mean, that would be great for your fantasy team. Time.
Or he strikes out for his fifth time and he screws me over on fantasy. But you know,
one of the two.
Strikeouts don't count against anything. It's offense. Custom. It's all offensive numbers that count for something, right?
Custom league.
Oh,
some leagues have it set like that. Those are always funny,
right?
Tommy Malone was placed on the DL due to a sprained left knee. Obviously, not.
They put him on the DL faster than they put anybody else on the DL.
Well, I guess when you give up 7 runs in an inning, you're off. Like,
you got a sprained knee. I got a what now? You got a. Sprain knee.
Oh God!
If you only gave up 5, maybe you wouldn't have been on the DL. But 7 was the Mets.
I'm really on my like Mets sketch idea game right now. Like if the Mets were a sketch comedy routine, which they kind of are, but if it was sensationalized more than that, I'm sorry, Nick, you were hosting. What were you saying?
Obviously, Malone not a serious piece on the starting pitch, and he was more to try and eat innings. But one of their serious starters, Steven Matz, is expected to need another rehab start out of AAA. He, like Yoenis, should be back sometime in the beginning of June and next week. So, Sam, how much do the Mets need Steven Matz back?
I mean, this is a whole nother issue that we have to deal with is the fact that the Mets are struggling. They definitely need Steven Matz back. But now you're going to have Terry Collins being like, oh, it's his first, it's his second start. You know, I didn't want him to pitch the 7th, you know, because he's just getting back. I mean, it's just a whole other thing we got to deal with. And, it, you know, that it's just been unfortunate that Steven Matz hasn't been able to stay healthy.
And Mike, you know, how effective do you feel he can be for the team? Like Sam said, this guy also isn't a guy that really goes very far deep into games. So what do you expect out of Matz?
Okay, when he's healthy, I'm going to be optimistic here. He's one of the best left-handed pitchers in the league when he's healthy. That's what I've always seen from him. He got great movement on all of his pitches. I've always liked Mats even when he was a prospect. Yeah, he got injured a bit too much, but so did Noah Syndergaard down in the minor leagues. But realistically, coming back from the DL, I'll go 6 2/3, 2 or 3 runs, 6 hits.
That's sort of like my agreement on with you. The numbers, one of the hardest starting pitching lefty fastballs, one of the second hardest like starting pitching slider, only to Noah Syndergaard. This is one of the more dominant hard throwing pitchers in baseball. And when healthy, you know, he does put up great numbers. But I think the big concern is, you know, if he can get 6 2/3, I think that'd be fantastic. But I feel he's always going to be this 5-6-inning guy, and that's a little bit of concern because I don't know if that changes
too
much.
They all are. They haven't stretched these guys out. They haven't stretched any of these guys out.
Well, part of it is that, and part of it is do they have an... Like, not every time do we see, like, Robert Gesellman or any of these starters have 84 pitches after 8 innings. That's a rarity.
I don't mean
guys.
To cut you guys right. off, but Darno just came up limping running to first base. Metsland.
I didn't take long for Darno.
So they're going to have to go get a catcher?
Well, no, I think Kevin Pollock is just going to jump back on the plate.
Yeah, his mileage is going up.
God.
He's just going to get a call and be like, it happened already.
Yeah. Okay. You know what with Pelekli, what I'm seeing this year? He's making great contact. It's going to someone, though, each time. If you look at the film, he's hitting the ball hard. It's going to someone on a line drive more than half of the time.
He's got to figure something out. I mean, it's just getting late early for both of these guys.
Well, that was the issue with Lagares for the first month and a half of the season. He was just hitting the ball extremely hard, but everything was going straight into someone's glove.
And then when you have Terry telling the media, well, we thought we could hit, that's going to ruin your confidence right there.
Oh. Well. It's just, yeah, but like, he's supposed to be this player's manager. Everybody loves playing for him. He's throwing his... players under the bus, left and right.
Yep.
This is a very, very upbeat podcast.
I know. Oh, you guys want to hear something? I speak to Vic Black on Instagram. He says the Mets organization can get some more control on their players and coaches.
I mean,
that's what he said about the Mets organization.
I think that's an easy one to spot. I mean, just look at how they do with Matt Harvey. Look at how they control like Noah Syndergaard with the MRI issue. They don't have any like real control over these young kids.
Oh, by the way, I know a new training personnel there from the San Francisco Giants AAA affiliate. He's getting his resume ready as we speak.
At this rate, I mean, all they got to say on their resume is, I'm not Terry Collins.
Or I'm not Roy Ramirez.
Are we sick of talking about the 2017 Mets yet?
No, not really. This is fun being pessimistic. Ooh, nice catch, fan. That was probably the best catch ever. Just caught it with a beer in his hand.
This team.
Probably the highlight of the season right there.
Anybody curious about the 1945 Brooklyn Dodgers?
Good thing I don't know history that far back.
Right? Oh, my God.
Well, if you want to get into the 1945 Dodgers, Sam, you can jump right in there.
Well, you know, I'm definitely partly paying attention to what Juan Lagares may or may not do, but... 87-67, finished third in the National League. Manager Lee DeRocher. This was basically the last WAR season, and they were first in attendance at 1,059,220 back then. You know, not obviously not a pennant-winning season for the Brooklyn Dodgers, but a nice season nonetheless, as the United States finished off the war. And the 1945 New York Giants finished fifth that year at 78-74, were third in the National League with 1,016,468. So it looks like a lot of people in the New York region coming back from the war spent some money on some baseball that year. And I'm not even going to look up the 1945 New York Yankees to see what their attendance was. Because why? Why? Why would they do that?
I hate Yankees fans when they bring up the 27 rings. I'm like, stop it. Just stop it. You guys were on steroids.
You weren't there for most of them.
Yeah.
Certainly a better, a much better season than in the 1944 when Brooklyn Dodgers really struggled, and so did the
oh my god, they were miserable.
The New York Giants as well. Both teams finished really bad in the National League in 1944 season. So for the Dodgers to bounce back in the 45 season, very impressive.
Yes, yes, that was very impressive. Leo DeRocher, who it's very hard for me to see as anybody but a Dodger. And, you know, he didn't finish his career, but he was a coach in the middle of the 60s with the Dodgers out in Los Angeles. And even though he won a championship with the Giants, and a lot of Giants are very familiar with him.
Conforto just got a single. Juan Lagares is going to third. Runners in the corners, one this out, bottom nine.
With who coming up? Reyes.
Whoever's that after Conforto?
That would be, you know, Jose Reyes.
We started the 1944 talk thinking, oh, this game is over. So why don't we continue it since, nothing's going on over there at the 2017 right now, right?
Yeah.
I want to check some.
Well, this becomes the same story as last night's game a little bit, because the Mets had the bases loaded, nobody out, tying run on third. In this scenario, one out, runners on the corners, tying run on first base. So, you know, the Mets are putting themselves in positions to tie situations up, and that you got to appreciate, but it's, can you get the runs home at this point?
Jose,
I mean, here's the thing. You appreciate it out of the 1962 Mets. They still finished 40-120.
Oh, God. I wonder how I would have lived back then.
Not as a Mets fan.
You would have loved it. You would have loved having baseball back.
Oh, God.
Oh, going on to a little bit about the Mets in 2017... the Mets have won three of Zach Wheeler's last four starts. Wheeler in his last four starts has allowed two or less runs, but he's walked four or more batters in three of those four starts. Sam, how do you feel Wheeler has pitched, and are you concerned with the walks?
I'm not concerned with the walks because that's what he's always done. And considering that he's just getting back, I knew that there was going to be a bridge, basically, to getting back to becoming a major league pitcher, basically. I mean, he had 1 year where he could be a major league pitcher, and then it was over. And so he's kind of had to pound the pavement a little bit to get back on track with everything. And I'm not concerned. I think he's pitched fantastically. Come on, Jose. What happened here?
Jose Reyes, fielder's choice, 4-3.
Oh,
Jay Bruce is up. Wait, now I just saw Jay Bruce's stats against who's ever pitching. He's like 3 or 4 for 8 against him. So why wasn't he in against Grandison yesterday?
Against Hand?
Yeah.
Because Terry Collins doesn't know this information.
Oh yeah, like he thought.
I'm sure he gets
faster
it though.
Than whoever.
I'm sure he gets
the information. He didn't realize that Josh Smoker was better against righties than lefties last year. He didn't know this stuff. That's why he was using
him
as a
lot of stuff. I think he has Alzheimer's.
Don't joke about Alzheimer's. That is a unfortunate disease.
No, it is. It is. I'm telling you, but I'm sorry.
I wouldn't go that far. I think he just gets the numbers and then just drops them.
What was it? It was like, you know, look up how many times Familia's pitched in three games last year, and you'll see you'll see. Yeah, we did, and it didn't hit end well.
I mean, there was time where that interview with him about Rosario, and he was like, I don't know what Rosario is batting in the minors. I don't get those numbers, or I don't look for those numbers.
Well, if you had a manager,
seems like you'd have...
if you had a manager of a major league team, would you really care if they're not coming up to the MLB anytime soon?
I mean, you should.
I mean, I think it. I think it. At one point, you have a lot to take care of when it comes to getting prepared for the game at hand, and you can't really necessarily be concerned about who you don't have. So I understand. That is a cliche, but I get it. I understand because there is a lot of preparation that has to go on, go into exactly what is going on with that day. And then you get word that this player is not feeling well, and then that player is not feeling well. I mean, to Terry's credit, he probably has a lot going on during the day. At the same time, there's some things that you wish he'd pay a little bit more attention to, and also not brush it off like it's a... like it's just nothing.
But, Sam, you're talking about the number one prospect. I get it if we're talking about the 10th or the 20th prospect or a guy that's, you know, Tim Tebow. But we're talking about the number one guy. We're talking about the guy that the Mets fans are supposed to be the most excited to see when this guy gets called up. And you can't just know what he's hitting for right now. That
Mets
doesn't
lost.
Make sense to me at all. So
yeah,
Mets will lose 2 out of 3 to the San Diego Padres, who are 18 and 31, while the Mets are 19 and 26 now.
Hey, and did you see how the Giants were after the Mets lost to them? They like went on a pretty solid stretch. The Mets are serum.
The Giants actually are 20 and 29 at the moment and are just
29. That's much better than where they were.
Yeah. They're pretty much the same amount of games behind for the wild card.
As us.
Yes.
Can we just give up on the season?
No.
Almost.
That's not how it works, but I like I've been saying, 2018.
Wait, Rafael Montero did that pathetic? Oh my God! Thank God,
Montero needed.
You weren't paying attention. You weren't paying. Oh yeah. Let's talk about Montero, huh? Let's talk about how Montero's still on this team, huh? We haven't brought up Rafael Montero yet on this podcast.
Rafael Montero needing 45 pitches to get through the first inning.
He's done. He's done.
Oh my God!
How can
God.
You not DFA him after this?
DFA,
why did
I mean,
Sandy,
the,
why did Sandy like Alderson trade Enoa?
Wait, say that again?
Why did Sandy Alderson trade Enoa?
Oh, Gabriel Enoa. I thought you were saying Noah, like why did he trade for Noah Syndergaard?
Yeah, I heard something along that line. I thought that's what he said, too.
Yeah. I was like, what? When did that happen?
Mets had a lot of prospects.
This was a perfect excuse. And if this was the Mets' plan the whole time, is, all right, we don't want Jake pitching tonight because it's disgusting out, but we want to give you one more chance. What are you going to do with it? And then
blow it.
He completely blows it again. And it's just like, just DFA, get this guy off this franchise. It's over. It's Fernando Martinez level. And they gave up on him way sooner than Rafael Montero. Is it because of depth? Is this the thing that he's still part of depth?
Well, he's only got an 8 ERA.
That's actually better than I thought. I thought it'd be an infinity.
it went from 8.1 to 8.2 tonight.
Oh, wow.
You didn't raise it that much when you think of it.
Yeah. DFA Montero. DFA Montero. Again, the last drink was over an hour ago at this point.
Oh, God. Montero. Oh.
this happens to be podcast 145, and Zach Wheeler wears the number 45, so why don't we go into some of the uniform numbers of all the Mets that have worn the number 45 in the past. So Zach Wheeler has worn it from 2013 to 2017. We talked briefly about Zach Wheeler. Justin Hampson wore it in 2012 for 10 innings. Jason Ingeryhausen, you know, spent his early career with the Mets, and in 2011 he wore 45. And now a big Met that wore it from 2005 to 2008 was Pedro Martinez. And Sam, any thoughts on Pedro Martinez when he was a Met?
It's just so nice to, like, go through a list of players that have played with the Mets and go, oh, and Pedro Martinez was a Met. It's just so awesome that we get to say that. I love Pedro. And I mean, like, do I need to say anything else about it? Like, Pedro was a Met. That's it. He was a Met. It's awesome.
Yeah, his first year with the Mets, won 15 games and a 2.82 ERA. 2.82.
No, I was going to say 2.82. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Sorry. 2.82. And, you know, one of the most dominated pitchers in all of baseball for a brief span was in New York.
And obviously we got him, you know, later in his career, and we didn't have the best Pedro. We had a pretty awesome Pedro those first 2 years. But, you know, at the same time, it was still Pedro Martinez. I mean, we knew at that point he was well on his way to a Hall of Fame career. You know, it didn't matter what he did as a Met. And what's awesome was that he wasn't bad as a Met at all. You know, he had a pretty solid pitching Mets pitching career. And, you know, he really helped turn that franchise around at the time.
Yeah, and he was also part of that 2006 team that made it all the way to the NLCS.
Well, him being injured was a big issue as to why we didn't win a World Series that year.
Yeah, and nowadays Pedro will speak out a lot of times. I know, Mike, you mentioned about the training staff on Pedro mentioned a couple times in the past, especially this year, because it had been Met injuries, of how the training staff was and a little bit about the Wilpons and, you know, a lot of issues when it came into miscommunication about, you know, the health and players.
And it is really unfortunate. You know, he had that thing about Jeff Wilpon wanting to, I think it was in a book about him wanting to pitch in 2005 when it was really kind of meaningless and they could have won the game anyway, even though, you know, they came, I think they were like, got as close to like a half game sometime mid-September behind the wild card, but they were never really going anywhere and they fell off before finishing over 500 with a good streak. But at the same time, it would have made sense. Like, even if you're going to make a run for it, it wouldn't have made sense for Jeff Wilpon to throw Pedro Martinez out there. Obviously, the Mets denied this, but Pedro believes it is, you know, Jeff Wilpon bringing up money and bringing up how I'm paying you, you pitch. You know, just think about how much of a brat you have to be to tell Pedro Martinez, you're pitching because I sign you checks, huh? If this actually happened, which I believe Pedro has more validity with me than Wilpon ever will.
I think I just went blind by seeing Rafael Montero's stats. Oh my God.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
what's that in front of me?
Oh, no, we're not talking Rafael Montero anymore because Rafael Montero doesn't wear number 45.
I'm sorry.
Huh? Right? Yeah? That's how we avoid him.
Yeah, well,
you know, I'm turning off the post game. I'm sorry.
Dude, why? Yeah, why would you ever watch it after a game like that?
I love to see Terry Collins' reaction.
You mean the same reaction he has after every game?
Yeah.
Animated with no real function as to what he was actually doing to make it work or not make it work?
Yep.
And, you know, after before Pedro Martinez from 1998 to 2004 was Mets closer John Franco. And my thoughts on John Franco?
Oh, do I remember that far back? That's the question. I know he was dominant.
Yeah, this guy's young.
Yeah,
I'll talk about John Franco. John Franco would always get into some, you know, iffy times, but he'd always prevail, generally prevail. You know, enough to obviously have a lot of saves over the course of his career. I forget what number he wore before wearing number 45 starting in 1998, because he was with the Mets for a very long time. He is a Met Hall of Famer, and certainly one of the bright spots of this number 45 list.
Yeah, he was a Met from 1991, and you got to go all the way to 2004 at those times. He didn't play in the in 2002 because of injuries, but overall, and this is a guy that for the Mets, 14 years and 276 saves in his time with the Mets, 700 plus innings and a 3.10 ERA. So, I mean, this is a guy the Mets trusted on for that closer role, and I mean, easily you could say for the Mets, they didn't really have much of a closer spot for the since 2004. It was mainly with John Franco, and I mean, from there, you had Billy Wagner for a little bit and some question marks at closer until recently with Jerry's Familia.
Well, you got to wonder. I think John Franco was on the mound when they made the World Series, when they won the pennant in 2000. And you have to wonder, because Armando Benitez, as dominant as he could be, did not come through in the clutch. And you have to wonder, as a Brooklyn-born player and being a Mets, growing up a Mets fan, maybe the Mets make that a more interesting World Series had John Franco been the closer.
Yeah, Franco was... A lot of things went wrong for the Mets in that 2000 World Series. But Franco, a native New Yorker, I think he's a Staten Island guy.
He's from Brooklyn.
From Brooklyn, but I believe he lives on Staten Island now, I want to say.
Oh, well, maybe. And I know that you have a dog in the race there.
Yeah, Staten Island native myself. From 1995 and 1996, you had Jerry DiPoto. And then in 93 to 94 was Maru.
You forgot Mr. Niemann.
Mr. Niemann?
Mr. Randy Niemann. Are you on ultimatemets.com?
I'm on two different websites, so I go back and forth to make sure that each one's got it on there.
Is the baseball reference one's kind of malarkey.
Is it bad I never heard of any of these players?
Feel bad.
You've never heard of Tug McGraw?
No.
You've never heard of Tug McGraw?
Oh, no, I've heard of him. Oh, I thought you said someone different just then. You came in broken up.
Okay. That's basically it. Like, you're about to go across some players that only Greg Prince would be able to talk about.
The 144 episode, I was reading off the names. Well, in the 144 episode... Hello?
Nick, breaking up. Hey, you've been breaking up a little bit.
Oh, that's not good. Better now?
Yeah.
Much better.
Alrighty. Yeah, and the 144 episode, Dread Prince really took over that. Mike, I barely knew any of the names that I was reading off.
And a spoiler alert, if you haven't listened to the 144th episode, Jeff Riordan, Ray Searidge, Tom Kluck-Lorick. See, jeez. I bet you somebody on that pronounced that correctly. Oh, and Jason Isringhausen. That was his first number.
Never mind. That's a stupid question. I remember.
About Isringhausen?
No, it was about... I was wondering what number Willis Castillo wore.
I think two.
Who cares? Let's never forget about Luis Castillo. Let's never talk about Luis Castillo or remember him ever again.
Why? He was the GOAT for the Yankees.
Yeah, right. Something he'll always be remembered for.
What I hate about it was that he was, like, an excellent player for the Marlins.
Yep.
Like, won them a World Series. They will always remember Luis Castillo in that way. And you're like, oh, oh.
Yeah, different players are remembered for different things. Some good, some bad.
Really, like, just like, where did you go? You were, like, a really productive player. God, Omar Minaya thought he had made such a good move signing that guy up 4 years. Like, I gotta keep this guy around.
I can't fault it for the worst decision ever. I mean, we did see Jason Bay for a while.
Oh, God.
See? There we go.
He was number 44. I know Jason Bay was talked about in the last podcast.
Yes.
He's still in my nightmares.
I love Jason Bay. I think he has the perfect, terrible Mets career. Couldn't get any worse.
So in the early 90s as well was Paul Gibson and Mark Carrion.
Yeah, they had a lot of people going in and out of that 45 then, huh?
Yeah, seems to be a bigger number. As well, in 1988, Ed Nunez. And I feel like I'm going to butcher the 1987 one. John Candelaria.
John Candelaria.
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 It really seems only the big name that's going to be left is later on with Todd McGraw, but Randy.
You also Neiman, have a. Oh, Randy Neiman, yeah.
In 1985. I thought it was interesting.
Randy Neiman, I remember Randy Neiman as a bullpen coach.
Well, more known for a coach than a player.
Right.
In 1982 and 1984, you had Brent Daff. And Sam, if any comments on any of the guys that I'm rattling off, just jump in at any point.
The next one, you got it? No, I have no comments on any of the ones you just named because I just, like, we don't have any. I was born in the 80s. I wasn't conscious, really. But Bob Gibson coming up was a coach for the 1981 season with Joe Torre. And it was a quite the shock the first time I ever saw a photo of Bob Gibson in a Mets uniform. And then for everybody, that is, you know, one of the greatest pitchers of all time, Bob Gibson, who is mostly known for his Cardinal uniform.
And following that is Jeff Reardon.
Jeff Reardon.
Reardon. I believe he also wore.
That's all I have. He did.
I believe he also wore 44 at one point.
So goes the 79, 80, 81, 82 Mets teams.
Yeah, I remember saying his name on the 81 is in 1981 he wore 44, and in 1979 and 80 he wore 45. So just trying to make it lower down the numbers.
You know, what's interesting about, and we're coming up, I know Bill Connors, Rick Baldwin, sorry, I'm skipping over all everybody. Butch Metzger in 78, Rick Baldwin 75 to 77, and then you have Tug McGraw, who wore it from 69 to 74. Now, although Bill Connors wore it in between, Tug McGraw also wore it from 1966 to 1967. Now, obviously, that must mean that he wore another number. I'm going to have to John Springer, who put this list together, I believe he's been on the podcast before, but he would know why Tug McGraw is listed this many times with number 45. But he's listed three times in this list, and that is certainly curious, wouldn't you say, Nick?
Yeah, well, he must have switched numbers at one point, because at 65, you have two guys that wore 45, which is Tug McGraw and Ditslama. And then you have, as you mentioned, he wore 66 and 67, and then Bill Connors wore it in 68, and then Tug McGraw went back to it in 69. So,
but he didn't. He's not listed as having worn any other number. On this list, I mean. On this website.
He had Bill Connors for 9 games in 68.
Yeah, as numbers in the 60s were wont to do, they were still trying to figure out their identity, still trying to figure out their history, and number 45 certainly became to have it would be, you know, from Tug McGraw to Pedro Martinez to Jason Isringhausen to Zach Wheeler, number 45 has had its impact, even though it's pretty underwhelming overall list.
Yeah, there's certainly a reason why he missed in 68. But he's not on
Spoiler alert. We get to talk about Oliver Perez next podcast, huh?
Ooh.
Get excited.
I would love to see the rage in that one.
Will there be anything positive?
Coming up on the horizon, don't know. Last time I've seen the Mets lost a series to the Padres. And that are now 19-26.
Great job, Metsies. Good job. Good fundies.
And subpar fundies.
As well, and in 1964, Ron Lott wore number 45 as well, and he was the first player to wear 45.
Excuse me for not finishing that one out, but my God, this team can really pull you in many different directions. Why don't we examine Ron Lock, since talking about Ron Lock and the 25 games he pitched in 41.1 innings with a 3.48 ERA is probably the brightest thing we're going to talk about on this podcast today, huh?
A lot. Age 22 for the Mets at that time. Went 1-2 for the team.
Yeah, not bad.
I mean,
not
this
bad.
Was a team
walked
that struggled
many.
In the
walked
early 60s.
Walked more than they struck out. Walked more than he struck out. And got to play in a brand new ballpark called Shea Stadium.
And again, this was a struggling team in the early 60s, but, you know, when you have young guys that were able to pitch, and again, him probably developing at that time.
Here's an interesting little trivia. UltimateMets.com says that Ron Lock was the most popular Ultimate Mets database daily lookup on February 23rd, 2010. I wonder why that was that day.
They keep records of that.
UltimateMets.com? Yeah, it seems like they do.
Well,
let's see. Let's see what Wikipedia has to say about February something 2000. No, he is still alive. So that wasn't the day he died. Knock on wood. Anywho.
I asked this question when it came to the last episode of who do you think was the best number 44. Sam, who do you think was the best number 45?
You know, when we start, I believe we started doing uniform numbers with episode number 44. We came back around. We've done the full lap now, lapped the field, as they say, going to number 44 again. And now with number 45, I think the last time that we talked about 45, I think we said that Zach Wheeler has a chance to become the best number 45. And we're basically exactly where we were 100 episodes ago with Zach Wheeler. He still has a chance to become the best number 45. He hasn't pitched in two seasons now, unfortunately. But we shall see. I think right now it's Tug McGraw's to lose. Wait, that doesn't make any sense. He's not going to. Only Zach Wheeler can beat it. So, and for, especially for the people who love Tug McGraw out there, I apologize. That was a strange thing to say.
And Tug McGraw, again, pitched very well for the Mets for, what, at least 14 seasons? Played for the Mets for nine.
Not 14 seasons.
Yeah, nine seasons. 47 wins, 55 losses at that time. And from age 20 to age 29. You know, for me, I think it's John Franco. I think this may be just a little bit more of my age, because Franco was around when I was first growing up as a Mets fan. But again, this is a guy that had 270-plus saves with the Mets. A lot of wins, and one of the more dominant closers for the entire New York Mets franchise.
I will say Tug McGraw over my argument to you for that, because I understand where you're coming from with John Franco, but I think the impact that Tug McGraw has on the actual franchise's identity, on top of both 1969 and 1973 and the whole "you gotta believe" thing. Remember, you got to remember that "you got to believe" comes from Tug McGraw. And I think that impact alone leaves it right now as Tug McGraw is the number 45 in Mets history.
And Mike, any thoughts?
They're all mediocre.
Yes. Yes. The pessimism continues.
They are. Zach Wheeler sucks. He can't throw a strike for his life. You know what? Call me up. I'll pitch for the New York Mets at this rate. I got a nasty slider, Sandy. Yeah. They're all mediocre. That's all I have to say.
Certainly there's a point to be made when you get up in those higher numbers of whether the players are there, you know, more as a serious player, or just as we saw a ton of 1 year or 10 days or 10 innings type pitchers as well.
Hey, Gazelman has a chance to become the best number 65 in New York Mets history. Maybe.
Gazelman. Oh, more like a goose. What type of hair is that?
Gazooseman?
Yeah,
Gazooseman.
Gazooseman. Like I like to call whatever his name is, the minor league second baseman, Zucchini.
Cicchini.
Yeah.
Zucchini. Or I think it's a...
Yeah, I call him
Nick,
Zucchini.
Are you Italian, Nick?
Yes.
So isn't Cicchini an Italian root name?
Asking a lot here on that one.
if you look at the name, if it is an Italian, from Italian roots, then it would be pronounced CH, would make a cut sound, as opposed to a ch sound, which is CI, as opposed to CHI.
Yeah, like,
I took Italian in high school.
Got a nice,
after years of Italian, you think I would know this. yeah, it's more of a chi, almost like a K, I believe. It all does also go with the vowel that it goes with.
And it's falls into a line of mispronounced, mispronounced in America last names of Mets minor leaguers. Plavecki should be pronounced as I just pronounced it. Plavecki. That's a V sound. That's a V sound. It's not Plavecki. It's Plavecki from whatever roots that comes from in Eastern Europe or Scandinavian or Norwegian or whatever it is. It is definitely pronounced with a V sound. Plavecki. And doesn't that sound better coming off your
yes,
tongue?
Yes, it does. Yes, Plavecki. That's what I was saying. Thank you.
It makes more sense. And so Gavin we're all saying Cecchini and Plawecki.
Zucchini.
Neither are pronounced zucchini.
I think also it does have to go with, you know, how a person wants the name to be pronounced as well. Like, we can look at it one way and it gets pronounced a total different way, and that's because of how that person pronounces their own name.
So, I'll tell you though, there's a grandfather, there's a great grandfather of Kevin Plawecki's out there, you know, at Christmas dinner table, complaining about how they first pronounced his name when they came across Ellis Island back in the day. They kept saying Plawecki. I told them no, it's Plawecki.
And you mentioned Gizelman as that 65. I would argue that he already passed to be the best 65 already.
Oh, but you're looking ahead. You're getting a
little. Well, I mean, you mentioned it, so I was like, how many actual people have the number 65 as a Met? So
how many? One.
Two. And he's competing with one guy with a 5 ERA. So. I don't know how much
of a competition. Gizelman's already the most famous number 65 in its history.
But that, of course, we'll get into on a much further episode, I'm sure.
When are the Mets walk-on tryouts?
Really thinking about it? You should be the Mets weather baseball man.
I should be. They should follow me.
You could play and also make sure that the grounds keep the groundskeepers keep the ground proper.
Yeah, like some
predictions.
Yeah, if I knew it was gonna rain and I knew Montero's pitch, I'd be like, okay, guys, you gotta rain out the game. Rain out the game if you want to DL.
Really, when you look on the bright side, Jacob deGrom could have given up 4 runs and we would have lost 4-3. So luckily, we saved him for tomorrow.
Against the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Hey, they're hot right now.
Yeah.
Thank God we didn't trade for Andrew McCutchen. What is he batting, like 202?
I would have said he's batting better than that.
No, I thought I saw something yesterday. He's batting like 202 or something.
Yeah, we don't need the outfield.
Yeah.
That's true.
I'd rather save all the money for Bryce Harper. I'd rather get Mike Trout, but Bryce Harper would be the
free agent. Getting Bryce Harper. 203 is McCutchen's batting average.
I was only a point off.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly going to be, you know, an interesting season on how the Mets can continue and, you know, if they can finally get on somewhat of a winning streak in what will be a very tough 10-game span between 6 against the Pirates, 4 against the Milwaukee Brewers, 3-4-3 in that span. And, you know, I think a lot of Mets fans, as we've said on this podcast today, looking forward to the 2018 season. There hasn't been much to be thankful for or looking for in hope. And it's tough to see right now the Mets making a serious run and struggling against teams like the San Diego Padres. So the Mets are certainly going to have to make some changes.
Like this, series like this just leave you with no hope whatsoever that there could possibly be a turnaround. And obviously you don't want the Mets to think that way. But I was thinking 2018, and like I didn't really want to say it because I'm always like somebody who wants to be hopeful about the season, but there was just a part of me that was like, I'm really excited for 2018. I wasn't letting myself think that 2017 was going to be miserable, but I just had this feeling that this is not their year. And
my pessimistic ways are working.
No, they're not working because they're supposed to work against the pessimistic ways.
But they're going down to everyone else in the fan base now.
Right.
Well, again, I think not many people expected them to be able to pass the Washington Nationals. It seemed like the idea of a wild card at best, and we saw the Mets did in a wild card last year, and I think to everyone's belief, is it was gonna, it's going to be the same wild card team, which would have been the San Francisco Giants, would have been Madison Bumgarner again. So I think a lot of people going into the 2017 season believed the exact same thing that happened in 2016 will happen again. And
but now, like, they can't, they gotta stop banking on this stuff.
But now 2 months in, it seems like it's okay, we just want 2017 to end, or somebody get healthy, or something go right for this team, because nothing's worked right now.
Something they're seven games right. back in the wild card right now. They're 7 games back in the wild card right now, and that's missed it. an opportunity to gain on Washington today. And they have Atlanta, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, St. Louis, Milwaukee, Chicago Cubs, Dodgers, and Arizona ahead of them. They are in a miserable position.
But again, if you win and 7 out of these next 10 against two teams that are above you in the standings, that could change it. But
yes. We'll go all for the next 10. Have a riot start.
These are crucial games.
Because you got to make a push. You got to go into June with the right mindset.
How long have we been saying that these are crucial games? How long are we going to push it off? And just admit it. It's done.
I think that all depends on the mindset. The mindset of you keep Terry Collins, you try and play out the rest of the season hard, you hope guys can get healthy. Obviously, we know 2 months in, this isn't working. And they're going to have to make some changes, or they're going to have to start winning. Because one of the two is going to happen. But, you know, Sam, any final words or final thoughts on the episode 145 podcast of the Rising Apple Report?
Episode 145, I mentioned Tug McGraw, so I'm just going to have to, after so much pessimism on this show, I'm just going to have to utter three words from the man himself: you got to believe.
And Mike, any final thoughts?
Yes. My friend in San Francisco is waiting for his job application to be accepted through the Mets. And just Ray Ramirez is gonna be fired. Yep. My friend's gonna have a job in the New York Mets organization. Yep, we're good.
And again, Sam Maxwell and Michael Daniels, thank you for coming on. And
LN Mike in the house. Thanks. Nick, we appreciate it. Thank you. And, you know, let's go Mets, regardless of what they...
The pessimism.
Keep showing us.
Yep.
I'm Nick Sarasso, and this was the Rising Apple Report, episode 145. And thank you for listening, and let's go Mets.